In this case, the district court wrongly denied qualified immunity to the individual defendants because of the existence of four cases which are in conflict with each other. This conflict requires that this court reverse the district court and award the individual defendants immunity. This court in Billish v. Chicago in 1993 held that a consent decree between the City of Chicago and the Justice Department was not a defense brought by, or a defense to claims brought by third-party employees who claimed they were wrongfully denied employment or promotions based upon the city's reliance on the decree's terms. In support, the Seventh Circuit relied upon Martin v. Wilkes, a decision from the Supreme Court in 1986. However, just last year, the Eighth Circuit in Martinez ruled directly contrary to this court's decision in Billish and held that when a municipality acts pursuant to a valid and facially accurate consent decree, it is immune from damages when the city acts to further the decree's purposes by making decisions to promote African Americans or hire African Americans. In support, the Eighth Circuit relied upon the Supreme Court's decision in GTE Sylvania versus Consumers Union of the United States, a case decided in 1980, which held that third parties can be bound by an injunction even though those third parties did not intervene in the action and were not joined as parties. As this court knows from its many, many decisions involving qualified immunity, a conflict such as this, where we have two Supreme Court cases, each seemingly taking different views, and two decisions from the courts of appeal, one from this circuit and one from the Eighth Circuit, mandate a finding that the law is not clearly established.
And here's a big problem I have here. It's just, you know, when you look at the consent decree, just looking at the plain language of C1, which says promotion shall be based upon relevant standards and criteria which will be applied without regard to race or color.
Yes.
I mean, this to me is the most problematic issue you have, because it seems to me there was some misinterpretation of the consent decree.
If so, that's been a misinterpretation that's existed for 30 years between
right.
the city and the Justice Department.
Yeah, and then that consent decree, it treats race-conscious decisions in hiring differently than promotions.
And that was one of the core arguments in our brief, Your Honor. To make those various provisions consistent is to interpret the decree as we've suggested. Recall that in the hiring provision and the provision regarding transfers, not only did the court authorize in the decree the ability for the city to make race-conscious decisions, in one instance, it required them. In the hiring provision, it specifically dictated that the white applicants were to be taken off the list and all the black applicants were to be hired. Based upon that and the other provision dealing with transfers and assignments, it specifically says race should not be the sole consideration when making those decisions.
But this is a promotions claim. This is not a hiring or assignments claim.
Yeah. That's right.
And that's the language I was quoting, is the promotions language.
That's correct. But the way to reconcile the provisions that specifically dictate race-conscious decisions with those regarding promotions is to recognize that provision of the decree which specifically says that the defendants are entitled to take reasonable affirmative action steps to accomplish promotions. As we said in our brief, Your Honor, that sentence that you just read is simply a restatement of the genesis of the consent decree to begin with. That is, the city was historically discriminating against African Americans. And that portion of the decree simply says, you can't do that anymore. But you can use whatever affirmative action steps are reasonable to accomplish the decree's purposes. Doing so reconciles all the provisions of the decree by saying, look, with hiring and transfers, you can consider race. You can do it with promotions, too. But you've got to stop the action that resulted in this decree in the first place, which is favoring whites over African Americans.
Why couldn't you advance the argument that the promotion limitation language in isolation, of course you say we should try to harmonize it. Why couldn't you say that there's a restriction on promotions because the overall aim of the policy of hiring in a race-conscious fashion and transfer in a race-conscious fashion will create the pool for promotion without race consciousness being a component of the promotion?
Because that would be inconsistent with the fact that the section I cited earlier specifically gave the city all the tools necessary to accomplish the decree's purposes. And in the safe harbor provision that I identified specifically said that actions taken in furtherance of the decree's purposes, that purpose being to increase the number of African Americans both in the entry-level ranks and the higher ranks, shall not be deemed discriminatory. Again, the decree was designed to give the city of Indianapolis the tools that were necessary to accomplish the decree's purposes.
Couldn't the decree, as I tried to elicit from Mr. Overhaul, limit it when it comes to promotions and still comply with the overall game? And why could that? Would that have been in some way a consent decree that would be flawed in some fashion? That you relied on these two avenues or streams of improvement in overcoming discrimination and left promotion to benefit from those new streams of anti-discrimination action.
Is that a possible way to interpret the decree? Yes.
Considering the language that Judge Williams has brought forward.
It is possible to interpret the decree in that manner. However,
certainly when you look at that language is pretty clear. The promotions won't be. I mean, you have to concede that. I understand you're saying that the city's reading of it is to put that in context of what the goals are and what some of the other paragraphs are. And you're saying the city's interpretation of that clause was reasonable, but we have to look at everything. I'm just saying when you look at the plain language of that provision, though, it's no question there that it says that promotion should not be race-based.
That sentence says
says. That section.
Yes. However, I would add one point. When you say the city interpreted the provision or the consent decree in that manner, that's not the only party that did.
Oh, I understand.
The Justice Department, everybody did.
Right.
This decree for 30 years was interpreted in a certain fashion. Mm-hmm. But I understand your point.
Yeah.
Because it has been interpreted.
And the thing is, when the consent decree was entered, as you said, everybody had this understanding for 30 years. And so, you know, when you look at this promotions language, I just think it's unfortunate that, you know, there was this interpretation for 30 years, and that paragraph is pretty clear. And so this misunderstanding was just something that everyone had.
I think that's right. And getting back to the issue which is before the court, we're here talking about qualified immunity of the individual defendants. I mean, if this court determines that the interpretation that I'm presenting here today was wrong, what does that mean for purposes of qualified immunity? Mm-hmm. Well, again, because it's been out there for 30 years, is it fair to take these office holders, a mayor, a sheriff, others, who came into office decades after the decree was entered, and say, oh, by the way, we don't think this decree now means what you all thought it meant?
Well, the problem is that there have been several significant intervening Supreme Court decisions which have unequivocally held that race-based remedies in this context are unconstitutional.
I would say two things about that. Actually, three things. First, there is no Supreme Court case that addresses this point about the decree that you've just raised, that's been raised by the court about the meaning of that sentence. Second, those other cases that have come along, Martin versus Wilkes and others, have not reconciled Martin and GTE. Those have not been reconciled. Plaintiff has not come forward with a case that says this is how you reconcile GTE and Martin. So to this day, as the court held in Martinez, that issue is unresolved. So for qualified immunity purposes, the defendants must be entitled to immunity because it can't be said that that's clearly established. I see my white light is on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Overholt. Mr. Meyer.
May it please the court. My name is John Meyer, and along with Don Orzeski, we represent the plaintiffs, appellees, officers Finch, Mungovan, and Hensley. I think initially it's important to point out Counsel has stressed the point that he's claiming that the city has interpreted this consent decree in a certain fashion for 30 years.
The city and the Justice Department.
That's what he alleges. This was initiated a motion for judgment on the pleadings. There is no factual record of how the city and the Justice Department interpreted this, or that they made race-based promotion decisions for 30 years, and that they did this. And in fact, the fact that if they interpreted it incorrectly, that doesn't make it a question where the law is unclear on the issue. The whole point of strict scrutiny is to smoke out the improper purposes of using race-based criteria. I mean, we don't know if they interpreted it if they did interpret it for 30 years this way and continue this practice. I mean, were they doing it for basic racial political reasons, as opposed to the benign purposes that they want to assert and rely on? And I think that's why, you know, the strict scrutiny standard is there, because a party can't just come to the table and say we have benign purposes and we're going to make race-based decisions because we have these benign purposes, when the color of skin is not a proper criteria for making decisions about qualifications of officers.
I think they would argue that when you look at the consent decree and various sections of the consent decree and what the overall goals and objectives were, that they were trying to fit within those goals and objectives in the consent decree.
Well, I think the fact that you have goals doesn't give you a mandate in order to make race-based decisions, especially when the consent decree doesn't mention that you have that right, and in fact specifically says that you do not have that right in Section 9C1. The provision that the appellants hang their hat on in the appeal, this section out of the general provisions, Section 1A2, which appellants refer to as a safe harbor, is not an affirmative grant of a right to engage in race-based decision-making. And in fact, it only shields what is expressly required by the decree or permitted. The decree expressly does not permit race-based promotion decisions, so that section of in the general section of the decree doesn't even come close to shielding their actions, because it's not a grant that says you can do whatever you want to achieve goals that are the ultimate final finish line of this decree. It says if it's required or permitted. Well, when the decree specifically says it's not permitted, I would put to you that that clause cannot be used to justify the situation. The whole framework of the decree was to set up a situation where the training ranks were given a specific quota, and that through removing barriers to advancement by removing the any possible, you know, trying to remove or create race-neutral promotion policies and test that the numbers would trickle up, that would increase on a trickle-up theory. And, it, you know, appellants mention Section 10 regarding transfers. Well, the very next section, Section 11, dealing with transfers, states that the transfers do not involve promotions to a next higher rank. So, you know, as the judge pointed out, this is a promotion case. It's not a transfer case. It's not a hiring case. I mean, the only way appellants can make their factual predicate of this case is if it was a totally different case, if this was a hiring case and my clients were seeking entry into the training classes, and because of the 25% rule, they weren't given their position.
Mr. Meyer, just a factual inquiry. Does this litigation continue because there's a concern that the city is not adhering to the promotion, as you would interpret it, promotion policy? I mean, you were made whole, right? I mean, offered to make whole.
What happened in that, I guess, that is a separate lawsuit.
I understand.
Yeah. And they were offered this. They were never included in that lawsuit. They were never given notice of that lawsuit. And they had to, you know, proceed from the beginning to protect their rights and spend their time, their effort, their money to initiate this process, and they were ignored through that procedure by the city. And we have been reasonable.
I'm not challenging either your intent or your plaintiff's intent. I'm just wondering where we are in Indianapolis on the issue of promotion.
I guess, you know, there was a new administration. This is all outside the record, obviously, but there was a new administration that came in and
I understand.
And changed how the operation was going on with as far as this consent decree. And that's what led to the resolution of that other lawsuit. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well,
And appellants also try and argue that there's a section which is the addendum in 8A that he claims is support for taking race-based promotion decisions. As pointed out in the district court decision, that section, which it dealt with hiring of patrol officers, number one, it didn't deal with promotions. And I would disagree with counsel's position that if you read that section, that it says that, you know, all the black officers on that particular eligibility list for hiring into patrol officers would have to be hired before white officers. What it really says is that eligibility list can only last so long as, you know, under three circumstances. It's going to terminate if the court says so. Once new hiring eligibility tests are instituted, and then once all the blacks, and then if all the blacks are promoted off that list, it doesn't say that the black officers had to be promoted over the white officers, or it wasn't promotions. I'm sorry, it was hiring. So I misspoke on that. But I disagree that is support for that. And I think another indication is that the individual plaintiffs under the consent decree, the Larkin plaintiffs, were not promoted ahead of any white officers. They were given the right to take exams again. So I think that those are important aspects. Going back to the section that appellants claim is the safe harbor, section 1A2, which is the sentence from section 1A2, it also says that it references that actions taken that are required or permitted under the decree that will not be determined to be unlawful under two statutes two separate statutes, not the Constitution and not Title VII. So I don't know that even applies because it references two separate statutes. I would also disagree that Martinez is authority that the court can rely on, moving to the legal argument of counsel, that Martinez is a precedent that can be relied on the qualified immunity issue. It was a 2008 decision from the Eighth Circuit, which is 2 years after the challenged violations in this case. And I think the touchstone of qualified immunity is the question of whether the law is clear at the time of the constitutional violation. And I don't think that there's any support to say that, you know, even if there was a subsequent split in the circuits, that would arise to creating confusion in the law at the time that the violation occurred. In the case that counsel cites in his brief, Wilson, I don't believe stands for that proposition. And in that case, the law was unclear in 1992 that the that in the, it was unclear that ride-alongs were a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It wasn't the subsequent split. And I think I've got like a minute. You know, Martin versus Wilkes was decided in 1989, 9 years after GTE. GTE was an injunction case, and I think it's distinguishable. Martin versus Wilkes doesn't even mention GTE. The dissent in Martin versus Wilkes doesn't mention GTE. And contrary to counsel, I do not see where the Martinez case even mentions GTE. So I don't think that there is any circuit split, and I think the law was clear in this circuit and based on Martin versus Wilkes that a consent decree cannot form the basis of a defense to individual claims of discrimination by non-parties to that consent decree, especially when those non-parties had no knowledge of the consent decree when entered or an opportunity to protect their interests, which they didn't in this case, as my clients were not even members of the IPD at the time. And I also think Upton, the case of Upton is distinguishable, and that wasn't a case where the law was clear in the Seventh Circuit at the time, and the fact that there was a conflicting law in another circuit doesn't necessarily create a conflict in this circuit or a conflict of the constitutional law when the law is clear in this circuit. So that's all I have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Judge Sykes, I want to go back to a point you raised about subsequent Supreme Court opinions. I think I said I was going to give you 3 points. I got through two of them. There's one other one. Supreme Court in Wygant versus Jackson talked about the necessity of having a strong factual basis as a predicate to be able to take action such as this under the consent decree. That basis does exist in this case because if you go back and look in the record, there were stipulations of fact that set out the percentage of African Americans and whites that were employed by the department in the 70s. The huge statistical imbalance when compared to the Marion County labor force shows that, in fact, there is a basis for a prima facie case of disparate impact. So that factual basis is present.
But Mr. Overholt, if one accepts, as was obviously the case, that entry into the department was denied or suppressed, and a consent decree is formed, which says we have to open the doors at the entry rank, and we have to provide the opportunity to show that one can be deserving of promotion by having assignments not the ones that would let you display your talents for promotion, why would not the consent decree also, and for all the political or other legal reasons one puts a consent decree together, say that with those bases that when it comes to the actual promotion, that it, You don't factor in, because you now have people within the department. Those two streams, as I told you, address the entry.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you this. If several years into this, quote, mistake by both sides, as you know, the Justice Department, or at least interpretation, well, I won't call it a mistake.
Interpretation.
Yeah, right. And if there is a memo from a corporation counsel for the city 5 years ago or 25 years into the consent decree, said, listen, this is wrong, would that have changed the face of this case, if that existed, that we had a memo from the chief legal officer of the city saying you shouldn't be going forward?
I'll answer that two ways. First, I know for a fact that such a memo does not exist.
There's no what?
There is no memo like that.
No, that's a hypothetical. That's kind of what we do here.
I just want to make that clear. Secondly, under Martinez, I don't think it does. Martinez says you have to provide certainty to the parties to the decree, to the court order. And when you are obligated to follow that court order, you have to do it until there is a determination that that decree is no longer lawful. So under Martinez, I think you have to follow the decree. You have to continue taking actions to further the decree's goals by taking the necessary steps as required by that decree. I think that's what Martinez says. I think that's what GTE says. You have to do what you're ordered to do by the court until you're told otherwise.
What if there was a suggestion that the disparity, the racial disparity, was so great that this language I'm going to suggest to you isn't contained in the consent decree, but it speaks to the goals, that for the next 5 years, you will only consider minority applicants? Would that be acceptable interpretation under the consent decree?
I think it may not be, because the specific language of the decree talks about reasonable steps, and I think there would be a significant question.
Well, let's say there's the disparity is so great because of past discrimination that an administration were to take that position. I'm just trying to frame out the variables that under your suggestion that because the goal is understandably laudable, that we could move away from limiting language in a specific section, in this case the promotion, and allow for interpretations which would speak to the goals.
I think that's possible. However, even then, I think there would be an ability for the officers to obtain relief in the form of injunctive relief. Remember, Martinez only prohibits the officers from seeking a claim for damages. It does not prevent an action to seek dissolution of the decree. And in that instance, I think that would be the remedy that could be and should be available.
Now, I asked a couple of questions, and I know you had something you wanted to say before concluding.
And just getting back to Martinez just for a minute, of course, there the decree was pretty clear, wasn't it, in terms of the language, because the decree provided that 50% of the vacancies had to be filled with black applicants.
Yes, that's true. And here in our case, we have 25% for hiring. And then we have that what I call a readily ascertainable goal that allows for some flexibility based upon the percentage of the labor market. As that changes, it lessens or increases the city's responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. But that's, again, in the hiring area.
Depending on how you interpret the decree.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, just setting
right.
aside for a minute
yes.
promotions. I mean,
that's
you
correct.
Would argue that promotions would be subject to that as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My only other point, the point I was going to make, was addressing the comments by counsel about whether there exists a circuit split and what Wilson versus Lane means. Wilson versus Lane clearly states that a qualified immunity issue can develop after a decision is made based upon developing law. Secondly, this court in Upton versus Thompson specifically said when you have a circuit split, that is strongly indicative of the lack of clearly established law. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.